For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, we are previewing Premier Lacrosse League Week 3. PLL heads to Philadelphia this weekend. We will talk through all four games on the slate, including the two featuring the now hometown Philadelphia Water Dogs. Plus, we had some roster movement during the week. We will touch on that, but mostly previewing the weekend here. As always, if you are enjoying the podcast, please do leave a like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Share it with your friends. Spread the word. I appreciate it as always. Thank you for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia, and I am glad you're here. PLL weekend is upon us. Today, as you're listening to this, is Friday. The games actually start tomorrow this weekend. It's a Saturday-Sunday affair in Philadelphia. Before we get to the games, we had some player news this week. On Wednesday, I believe the move got made. Might have been Tuesday, Wednesday. The Redwoods, California Redwoods, trade Levi Anderson to the Maryland Whipsnakes in exchange for a fourth-round pick in the 2025 college draft, in the upcoming draft. Before launching the takes and all that about the deal, let's kind of just get the context and get all like the firm info that we know out there. Levi Anderson was drafted by the Redwoods this year. He was just taken, again, this is now a little over about 5 weeks ago. He was drafted by the Redwoods in the third round. He was also the 12th overall pick in the NLL draft, so a first-round pick indoors. He is currently on the unavailable to travel list as the visa issues get worked out. Anderson, big lefty, the versatility to play midfield or attack. I see him mostly as a feed-first type of player. He's great at kind of getting to his spot on the field with leverage and playing kind of eyes up, looking to feed as help comes towards him. Look, a year ago in a draft that was way less offense-heavy, I think Kark had him with like a first round kind of grade as like one of the 10 best offensive players available in the draft. So he's a later round pick in 2024, probably not in any other year though. The physical ability and then the skill that goes with it is pretty unique. He's a really talented player. He's Canadian. He's out of St. Joe's. I think there was some fit there where I kind of was a little surprised by this one. The Redwoods return a fourth rounder for him in 2025. In terms of, again, just sticking with like the concrete stuff, moves that we know have already affected that draft. The Woods traded their third rounder to the Archers for the last pick in 2024. So the Redwoods do not have a 2025 third round pick. They just acquired an extra fourth round pick. They used that pick from the Archers to take Cole Kastner. So this move adds some draft capital for them. And the Redwoods have been very good at finding quality players late in drafts, right? Cole Kirst, just now Garrett Degnan, Tim Trautner. It's not like a fourth rounder for them is going to be some kind of throwaway thing, to just dump Levi Anderson. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but based on how the Whips have looked through the first 2 weeks, it could be an early first half of the fourth round kind of thing. The Whips deal that fourth round pick in 2025, but they have a good trove of draft picks already. You have to remember they own the Cannons' third round pick in the upcoming draft. That was part of the deal that sent Connor Kirst and Bryce Young to Boston. So the Whips have their first rounder, second rounder, and now they have two picks in the third round. So dealing that fourth rounder, probably not the end of the world for them. And in terms of that being the price tag to get a Levi Anderson, I think it's a no-brainer. And that kind of takes me to my thoughts on the deal as a whole. From the Whip's point of view, I think this makes plenty of sense. I think the offense adds another midfield weapon. Anderson, yes, is on the unavailable to travel list. But look, we saw roster moves this week. Mike Robinson, Braden Maia, some other Canadians are coming off of that list. So it looks like visas are getting done here. It may not be this week, but he will be there in short order. And I think a midfield, you know, a midfielder like Anderson is something that I think they really need right now, especially with Dordovic out. They've needed somebody to create out of the midfield for them. And it's just somebody you can stick on the left side with a Matt Rambo, with, you know, with Malone, and feel good about the way that interplay is going to look just out of the gate. So I think it's a welcome reinforcement. I think the league, you have to remember, has a bye next week. We're in Philly this week. It's a league bye next week before they go to Minnesota. So when they get to Minnesota after this weekend and the next weekend off, the Whipstakes midfield might have both Tucker Dordovic and Levi Anderson in it. The timetable for Dordovic, I think, was basically after the bye, we hope to have him back. So that's a hell of a boost at the cost of a fourth-round pick. From the Woods' point of view, it's a little bit odd to me. Just because of the timing, investing a third-round pick in someone and then dealing them for a fourth-round pick about a month later before they've played a game for you, it just kind of feels like value is just evaporating there. I mean, if they ultimately think Anderson is not going to play for them, like they saw him, he got to camp, whatever it was, they got him worked out, and you said, given the rest of our guys, this guy probably doesn't look like a lineup regular, then yeah, get something for him. I guess I get it. You know, as soon as you feel like this guy can't help us, you make the move. Sunk costs are a bad thing. In sports, especially in big money sports, sunk costs are not something that front offices tend to really, it seems like, ever know about. You know, there's a lot of places in sports where it's like, well, he got drafted high, so he has to play. Or we're paying him a lot of money because he has to play. If the guy isn't good enough to play and you're playing him just because of how much he costs, that's a bad move. But that's different conversation. I think optically for the Woods, this is kind of rough. Levi checks the boxes of a lot of the things I thought the Woods would be liking, right? Big midfielder, lefty, feed first, can be used in those box concepts that Junior's going to love with some other box kind of skill guys that they have, because he has that strong indoor background where he's very highly regarded. As we said, he's a first-round NLL draft pick. It all just kind of fits. I think the thing is, and when you kind of start just looking at the Woods roster and you start looking at the lefties, you got like, all right, well, Bertrand here, Garnsey's here, they clearly love Degnan, you know, Kirst is here. They may not see the fit for Anderson as a guy who's going to push these other guys, these other lefties, out of the lineup. And if you think the guy's going to be a healthy scratch every week, then maybe you deal him. I personally, and I said it last year, as it becomes kind of a conversation most years as people start looking at like trade deadline moves and stuff like that. They did it last year. It was like, the Water Dogs have so many middies that some don't play. Should they trade one? Or like Chris Cloutier never plays for the Chaos. Should they trade him? He doesn't play a lot for us. Remains to me one of the dumber reasons to trade somebody, because he's not playing against you. And the guys like that were Chris Cloutier and like the Water Dogs midfielders who weren't always in the lineup, those are not the kind of guys you want playing against you. They're good enough to play for everybody. And the second there's an injury, you're going to want those guys around. And it costs you nothing to healthy scratch them. It costs nothing. I know that sounds like cold and all business, but look, man, it's pro sports. Pro sports. It's how it works. So I personally don't love the, well, he's not going to play, so we're going to try and get something for him as a good reason to deal somebody. But, you know, I realize there's different schools of thought on that. Something I'm curious about with the deal is, and this is kind of the first thing I thought when I saw it, was, so who called who, right? Were the Whipsnakes looking for the boost and they called up Nat, knowing Nat is never shy to consider a trade, looking for some help, and this is what they kind of landed on? Or did Nat maybe say, this guy's not a fit here, let's get him somewhere else, let's make a deal, Whips look like they need some help, let's shop him there, see what we can get back. To me, the team that initiated the discussion is interesting, because I feel like that will provide the answer to the question, why would the Redwoods make this deal? Is it because the Whips called up and they said, we want Levi, and Nat's thinking, all right, they want him and he's not going to play. Let's get a pick for him. Or is Nat trying to unload the guy? Either way, I think that answers questions about why the Redwoods would do it, which just seems to be the question everybody has. Why would you deal your third round pick before he's played for you? But I hope Levi gets an opportunity with the Whips. I have been like a loud and semi-obnoxious supporter and fan of Levi Anderson's basically since he tore Yale up in the NCAA tournament, very much the way Kark is, you know, where it's like he put himself on the map with that. You can't ignore the guy's ability. I think he probably plateaued a little bit in college after that, but I mean, you can't turn the tape on and just not see like this guy is a pro. They don't make him like this. So I hope he gets an opportunity. I think he and Dordovic getting back together will spark that team and spark that offense in a way that's going to help them. I think Dordovic will be back and he can stretch a defense because he's good from two, which is something I think the Whips need right now. I think they are both very good dodgers who can draw slides, which is, it seems to always be something the Whips need more of. So, you know, there's a lot of help there. To the games themselves. As I sit down to do this, the 21-man rosters for the weekend, I do not believe have come out yet, so not able to really provide a whole lot of color or analysis about who's in, who's out kind of stuff, but I will say this. All the games this weekend are at Villanova, which is a great place to see a pro lacrosse game. I believe the Philly Barrage spent some time there. It's a really good setting. The title game has been in Philly for the PLL the last few years, but it's been at Subaru Park, which is, you know, obviously a different venue. So familiar market, different venue. But I'm excited to kind of make my... I'm going to be there for this weekend. I'm going to head to Philly for these games. So I'm excited to kind of get back to Villanova. I haven't been there in a long time. See some lacrosse. I will say this too. How much does it just absolutely suck that the Outlaws are on a bye? Oh, just the worst timing in the schedule. Brendan O'Neill has people going nuts all week, talking about the performance, electrifying people days after the game ended. We're still talking about it. PLL puts out like an 8-minute feature about it, a video feature about it, because it was that special. We cannot get enough of it. And then, oh, Denver doesn't have a game this week. We don't get to get Brendan back onto the field. Oh, is that just rough? It's just a brutal early season break in the schedule for the fans, I guess. Silver lining, look, he's out there every week for the rest of the summer at this point. I'm going to call it now. He's going to be an all-star. But I was bummed. As soon as that game ended last week, I went and looked to see who was Denver playing next week because I wanted to look right away. Who's going to guard Brennan? What's the defense going to be like? What are they going to try and do? Are we going to get the same kind of electricity? Let's get into it right away. I was like manic about it, but bummed that he will not be out there this week. Bummed that Denver won't. I really like watching that Denver team, or at least I did the other night. For Brennan, sure, but man, Graham Bundy's going to be good. Luke Weirman was like, hello, PLL, I'm here to dominate. Like, that team has got some really exciting things happening if they can just keep it consistent and get more of what they got against the Archers. But to the games that are happening, the teams that are playing, as always, I should give this kind of qualifier because I do give the spreads when I talk about these. I always just pull these lines from DraftKings because it's just like the first thing I think of the first time I ever did this was get the lines from DraftKings. I don't actually bet lacrosse at all. If you want to or you're serious about making picks and wagers and doing all that kind of stuff and telling your friends how many units you're up or whatever, you should absolutely be line shopping at all the books and not just listening to what I tell you is at DraftKings. And you should also absolutely just be tailing Dan Alexander and Hutton Jackson because they'll make you money as the season goes on. Those guys have this thing clocked. Alrighty. First game. Cannons, Boston Cannons, Philadelphia Water Dogs. Saturday, 12:30, Philly, the home team on ABC. It's one of two ABC games this weekend. How great is that? Two ABC games in a weekend. I know people bemoan the paywalled games and stuff still for lacrosse, but man, we are not that far removed where the pro lacrosse TV schedule was the openers on ESPN News or whatever, and the semifinals and the finals are maybe on ESPN U and 2. That, and everything else was paywalled. And we now got two linear network TV games in the same weekend. This is the third ABC game of the year this weekend. You get, you know, the opener was ABC, and you get two more this weekend. So I'm loving that. And the ABC games do tend to rate better, I think. But as of this moment, the Water Dogs are a 1.5 goal favorite at home at plus money. So if you love the Water Dogs, you can, I guess, do what you will. The Cannons, they had a nice bounce back week. They handled the Whips pretty well in Carolina. The defense on point for them. Really on point for them. After a week, I know the Whips offense is a little diminished right now, but I think you got to give a lot of credit, I think, to Kyle Hartzell and the DC there, as the DC there now in the early goings. That defense lost its key critical returning player for the season in Jack Kielty, and he's not going to play this year. And Hartzell has still got them basically looking like a team that's been together for a while after, you know, kind of a rough week one. Two new top guys on the defense for them, right? And Bryce Young and Garrett Eppel. And that unit held a pro offense scoreless for over 22 minutes last week. I don't care if that offense was missing pieces or the Whips haven't been great or whatever. If you hold an offense with Matt Rambo, Zed Williams, and TJ Malone scoreless, goalless, pointless, period, for 22 minutes, you are a damn good defense. There is no other way to slice it. I imagine I started seeing it today, and I imagine we will see more of it as the game gets closer. But this matchup has been ugly basically since last year, really. And I mean that in a expect the penalty minutes and the personal fouls and all that shit to be maybe a little bit high in this one. The Water Dogs beat the Cannons badly in the semifinals last year, and the championship series rolled around, and the Cannons clearly wanted some payback, and they got some, but man, it was physical. You know, you go to that title game, you get Sowers getting laid out with a hit that takes him out of the game in the first few minutes that I'm sure some people didn't love. You get a hit on Jack Trainer in that game that was clearly late and high and bad. There was a bunch of bullshit around it in a scrimmage before the championship series even started. They were getting in fights and scrimmages. The regular season game at the championship series was physical with the high and late kind of stuff. And I'll say, and I don't mean this to be like disrespectful or accusatory or anything, the Cannons played that way against the Atlas in week one too. And I said it then. The Cannons are starting to get a rep as a team that plays that kind of game. You want to call it chippy with an edge, that kind of stuff. The Cannons are developing a reputation for playing that way. I think, look, the stuff at the championship series, it resulted in rule changes to protect players, to take action. And I think the league is in a weird spot a little bit because of it. Because the hits and the physicality, like I said, you're already kind of seeing it as a way that they will market as a reason to watch the game, because these teams are going to get after each other in a way that's extracurricular. And it's going to get pumped. It's already on social. It's going to be on social more. It's going to be in the pregame videos. They're going to talk about it, all that stuff. But it's a weird spot to me because you put these hits out there of guys like, you know, Sowers getting lit up, and it's all over social. But at the end of the day, it's a clip of a guy getting hurt, of a superstar getting hurt. And I know sometimes you frame it as like with like the bullshit is this a flag? Is this not a flag stuff? It's just a cheap way to post a hit where a guy gets hurt and you don't have to say you're just only posting a hit. If you do it like that, what do you think? But you know, I don't know if we see a ton of it. I hope we don't see a ton of it in the game. I should say, you know, I hope we don't see a ton of it. Sowers likes to attack the goal. He's going to be around the crease. But if we get that early hit in this game, that early one that's questionable, especially if it's on Sowers, it's going to be on. It's going to be on. It's not my favorite kind of game to watch, I'll say that. I'm sure it'll be a hit, no pun intended, with social and with, you know, all that kind of stuff. Maybe this is the first game of the year where we have a discussion on broadcast about the new player safety rules, because maybe it's going to come up. But you know, we'll kind of see what kind of... I think the tone of the game early on is going to be important. Again, this is also the first game of the weekend. 12:30, Saturday, ABC. This is the stage for everybody to see what you're about. And if you're about tune in for the fight and see a lacrosse game while you're at it and not the other way around, I've never been a big fan of that, personally. Fights happen in lacrosse. I know that. They happen indoors. They happen outdoors, whatever. But I don't love the idea of, like I said, of promoting the game like tune in for the fight and there's going to be a lacrosse game too. We want you to tune in to see the lacrosse game and the guys playing it on the field, and it's going to be physical and all that, and you know, this kind of thing has happened before. I think that's okay, but I don't like the idea of leading with fight. But related to that kind of discussion, by the way, I have a take. I don't know if this is hot or not, but I have a take. I know we've already had some big hits in the first few weeks here, and I had a thought about this the other day. I think the new rules talk about the punishments for players who violate the rules. I believe it's things like fines, suspensions, those kind of things are on the table. I have to go see exactly what it is. But how about this? If the league outlets use the hit that a player gets fined or punished or whatever for in a social media post, then you can't fine or suspend the player for it. Boom. Decide what you're about. Violent rule-breaking hits for clout or pro sports? If a player goes and levels somebody high and late and it gets a concussion and the player gets fined, don't share it. See if you can live with that. See if you can manage that. Might be hard. Anyway, Water Dogs were off last week. They should be fresh. They really weren't too bad against the Archers week one. Slow start, I know. They were down, whatever, 12-4, but they lost that game 12-11. So they battled back, man. Epple and Sowers has been a really good matchup in the past. In terms, honestly, if you're a young defenseman, I don't know how many of you are young defensemen listening to this podcast. If you're a parent or a coach of a young defenseman, I don't even know what my demos are. Whoever you are, if you interact with young defensemen, tell them to watch this matchup. Because it was really good last year. And the reason I say that, and I don't think this is at all disrespectful to say, and I don't think it's going to surprise anyone, Garrett Epple is not as fast as Michael Sowers. I'll give you a second to recover from that truth bomb that I just hit you with. Garrett Epple does not have the change of direction and the quickness and the speed of Michael Sowers. But Epple won the matchup last year. He got switched onto Sowers early in the game after Sowers had you know, eaten up some other defensemen, and Epple took him away. How does he do that? Sowers is so fast. How does he do that? Footwork and angle play, young defenders. Epple does it better than anyone in the league. He uses the angle to get to the spot where Sowers is going to be before Sowers gets there. Epple has the advantage of being able to go through the crease. He has less ground to cover. And that's how he stays in front of him. And he stays with him. It doesn't matter that Sowers is the quicker and faster player. Epple's footwork is so good, and he plays the angles of the Dodgers so well that he can stay with them. It really is a great matchup to watch if you're trying to see how you play defense on a guy that's faster than you. It really is good. So I'll be excited to watch Epple and Sowers, see if Sowers gets the better of him this time or if Epple once again wins the matchup. Second game Saturday, Utah Archers and Carolina Chaos. It's a Saturday evening game, ESPN Plus, a 7 o'clock start. So there's a gap between the two games. I believe it's actually double ticketed too. So you can buy a ticket to Saturday 12:30 and then you have to buy another ticket to 7 p.m. There's the big break in between the two. So Saturday night, 7 o'clock start. Utah is a 1.5 goal favorite in this one against Carolina. We had a great interview with Austin Kout on the pod this week. By all means, check that out. He may still get the nod here. He is a hometown guy in Philly, and he's played really well in place of the injured Blaze Reardon. But man, Blaze Reardon is not even on the injury report. Not even on it. The guy heals like Deadpool. I don't know how he does it. He had a kneecap injury that they were saying, all right, 2-3 weeks and he'll be back. And then last week, they're saying if it was the playoffs, he'd be a go. Like he didn't even miss a full week. If it was a playoff game, he'd be in there. I know indoors this year, he had a shoulder injury early in the year that they were like 4 to 6 weeks. Blazes on the floor again in like 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, back in NLL games. There's something superhuman happening with Blaze Reardon's ability to heal. I don't know what he's doing, but however it's happening, God bless him. He's healing like Credit to the training staff of the Carolina Chaos, I guess. Whoever the Chaos go with in net, they can feel good about. They're 2-1. Kout has played basically 2.5 games. He's in double-digit saves in all those games. He's 50% or better in all those games. He's really good. He's really good. It's why it's so hard to be to get a goalie spot in the PLL. If you know, and why goalies just don't ever seem to really get drafted, or they don't stick around much after they get drafted in some cases. Because everybody's got Austin Kout. Everybody's backup is, yeah, he can step into a PLL game and get you 50% and double-digit saves. All the goalies are so good. As I mentioned in the interview with Austin, there's potential for a bit of a goalie battle maybe in this one. You get Kout or Vierden on one end. You get Brett Dobson on the other. Could be a nice little back and forth. And a fun thing about that is both those goalies, whether it's Kout, Vierden, or Dobson, would, you know, Chaos goalie and the Archers goalie, are both guys who love to, on a clean save, move the other way quickly. Quick outlet, push it, tempo. So you get the chance for the rare combination of like the up and down game that's also a goalie battle. Those games are fun. So I hope it works out that way. We'll see. I said it a bit to Austin in the pod, and I made a point about it last week too, but man, this Chaos offense is fast. I called him Ricky Bobby on social this week. They just want to go fast. And to me, this is, again, this is another thing. Again, listen to the podcast interview because I get into it. Towers, in terms of a tactician, is underrated. He zigs when everybody else zags. Look at the defenders that have kind of been en vogue around the league to add in recent years. You get a lot of the bruiser types, guys who are going to stand with their heels on GLE and just be immovable, right? Teams were grabbing guys saying, I need somebody to guard Matt Rambo, Zed Williams, Connor Fields, Jeff Teat. What does Towers do? Just loads up on speed. Change of direction, guys. Knobloch, Ross Scott, Brian Minnickas, Jules Henningberg, Kyle Jackson. Just waterbugging their way around the field, snapping ankles in half as they do it. And with that group of speed, once again, the Chaos are just a bitch to try and prepare for. Because nobody is as fast as they are. Nope. Nobody has that kind of speed that can be maneuvered around the field the way those guys can. All five of those guys I just gave you could play attack or midfield. On top of all that, Sergio Perkovic has found his comfortable role in the offense, and they still have this guy named Josh Byrne who's really good. I think that group against a defense that's still trying to get up to speed in the pros could be advantage Chaos on that end of the field. I think when Carolina really goes, you know, like dodge, two passes forward, re-dodge, pass forward, re-dodge, and it's with like, you know, it's Knobloch starting it through to Ross Scott, through to Henningberg, like it forces a defense to move as fast as they do, and it's just not that easy to do, particularly for guys who don't have a ton of experience. I think the Utah offense is going to get a good test this week because the Carolina defense is one of, if not the best in the league. I think Jared Newman deserves a little bit of flowers through the first few games here. He catches some heat on the old internet sometimes, because who doesn't? But the popular dig at him is like, oh, he's out there because he shoots 120. He's not that good an actual defenseman. To that, I submit his first two games of the year. Middle-of-the-road guys who are only out there because of the way they shoot, those guys don't hold Ryder Garnsey goalless. They don't hold Jeff Teat to whatever he was, 1-for-7 shooting, something like that. They don't lock up the attack from Denver. He's been outstanding through three games. I would think he gets Connor Fields in this one. That feels like his kind of matchup. And then I feel like maybe you do Rowlett on Matt Moore and Bowen on O'Keefe or something like that. I feel like I kind of like that setup. I don't know. Maybe I'm nuts. I'm not the DC. But I think the question's going to be, what do you do with the Archers midfield? Not how do you deploy your close defense? Because Utah's got Schreiber, who's must pull at all times. So what do you do with Grant Amon, who's going to change the course of a game? Because he's been doing that now. He is healthy and he is confident. He was carving up the shorties against Denver. They just weren't able to close the gap and kind of get into his hips and get into play physically with him. And he was just finding space and ripping corners. He's currently the Archers' leading scorer in the midfield. He's the second leading scorer on the team. I don't know if there's a shorty that's ready to handle the healthy, feeling it, Grant Amon from those low wing spots consistently. I don't know. I think that's where maybe you see the game you know, turning. Can the Chaos Shorties handle Ament, Trey LeClaire? Can they handle those guys in the midfield? Zach Geddes made some big splash plays last week. I think he's a guy I'd spotlight and look for, you know, to be a critical part of the game. California Redwoods and New York Atlas, the first game on Sunday, Father's Day, ABC game at 12:30. Get your dad set up on the couch with a little whatever he's into. If he's like Mad Dog Russo, a little gummy and a cocktail for the afternoon game. Atlas are what IL's Chris Rosenthal calls the whooping of the week favorite. They have the 2.5 goal spread in this game. They are a 2.5 goal favorite. Last week, Denver was a 2.5 goal underdog, and that worked out. I know the data is that like the 2.5 goal dog was worse last year, and they've cooled off as the years have gone on. I've always been a sucker for the really big line, so I'm always going to take the 2.5 when I can get it. But Redwoods took a week two loss to Carolina, coming off their kind of awkward week one bye. You know, someone had to have it, and I guess the Redwoods just kind of draw the short straw where you go through training camp and then you don't get a game, and then you get like the regular season week of prep of like midweek Zoom call, Friday walkthrough game, or, you know, however that works out. But I feel like that's an awkward thing to navigate. I don't think, you know, the Redwoods made it seem like it wasn't a big deal. I feel like for me it would be really strange to go through it that way when nobody else did. The Redwoods have a lot of new faces. The scoring summary makes it clear. Not with names, but with kind of times, stretches of games. Three straight goals in quarter one, long scoreless drought. Six scores in about 2 minutes in the third quarter, no goals the rest of the game. The kind of up and down, hot and cold like that, the inconsistent, it's the kind of thing that can happen with an offense that's maybe figuring things out a bit, where they've got it and they're in rhythm and they're liking it, and then just you can't keep it where it is. They have some guiding voices out there. Like, they have, you know, consistent personnel. The attack this year is basically the same as last year, right? Of Pennell, Berg, and Garnsey. Midfield has a lot of familiar faces, even though they made moves. A lot of familiar faces in the midfield. Guys like Degnan look like they're going to have a big role. Nekai now primarily an offensive midfielder. No more Jules Henningberg. I'm expecting Chris Gray in the lineup this week. I think everybody is. So, you know, there's just enough that's different to take some getting used to take some adjusting. I think this game could be good because I think TD could potentially keep faceoffs closer to even. The Atlas enjoy a giant edge there with Trevor Baptiste. The whole world knows it. But a key for the Atlas this season has been they had the same advantage last year, and it didn't do much for them. But this year, they're so much better in the 32. And trying to counter Baptiste is critical because the Atlas aren't a team that are just going to, you know, be a turnover maven in the 32-second clock anymore. That's a key part of the game there, I think, is that face-off thing. Because if Baptiste, again, keeps it clean and going forward, and the Atlas play the 32 well again, then it might just be the same food just reheated for New York. The Redwoods defense has to tangle with this attack group that's just been absolutely deadly. Teat, Schellenberger, Dixon, unreal. It's insane to me. Eric Law is on the pup list. It's insane to me how much they don't seem to miss him. It's crazy to me. When he was out week one and then the Atlas were like on fire in that first game, I got a text from somebody that said, I think Eric Law is getting Wally pipped. And if you don't know that reference, then Google it. Google Wally Pipp. I think the Redwoods poles match up a bit better against this attack, though, the Atlas attack, than they do with the Chaos attack. And I know that seems kind of crazy, but Chris Fake, Arden Collins, these guys, they want to kind of get physical and guard you up close and personal with their hands on you. I think Fake on Teat is an interesting matchup if they go that way. And then you get Cohen to Schellenberger. Covering Dixon is hard because he's awesome at getting open on his own, but even if he's not open, Teat and Schellenberger can make him open with a pass at will. So you kind of heard me talking about that with Xander a couple weeks ago on Sticks In. I think he was on the Mitchell Pelkey show this week again. You know, he was on and they kind of had a similar conversation about, you know, the just sort of you're open because Jeff Teat says you're open kind of thing. I think the Redwoods D-Middies are where kind of I'm looking here. I think Dox has gotten to the point where he's must pull. He has reached another level through the first 3 weeks. I remember when he came out, people were talking like, yes, he's going to be a great pro. But somebody I was talking to was like, you don't understand. Like, his ceiling might just be Paul Rabil. Like, his ceiling is that he's that kind of player. And he's starting to trend in that direction to me. I think he's been otherworldly good. For a guy who also just spent a year, you know, trying to play pro football, to come back and be as good as he's been, he looks like midfielder of the year kind of good. You know, but so if you think Dox is going to get a pull, Costabile is on the injury report with the ankle injury. If he can go, you're going to short Costabile? You're going to short Malloy? You're going to short Miles Jones? There's no easy way to do this. I think I'm going to have my eyes in that goalie spot this week. I get a text every week that's like, when are they going to Entman? And to me, you know, Trautner went sub 50% for the first time of the year last week. I know fans are anxious to get their eyes on Liam Entman, the first round pick, the guy you traded up to get, the Notre Dame megastar. I don't think Trautner's kind of played his way out of the job yet. But I am curious to see kind of how long the leash is. You know, if you're in the first quarter and Degnan and Romar both hit a two or something, do you make the move then? I think that's where you kind of get a feel for it. I think it's going to be fun to see, though. Atlas is the last undefeated team. They are also perfect against the spread. They go over in every game. It's the kind of team you're happy is on ABC because they're going to make the highlights, man. They're going to make the highlights. Last game of the weekend.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Maryland Whipsnakes and the Philadelphia Water Dogs. 3 p.m. ESPN Plus on Sunday. Water Dogs are a 1.5 goal favorite in this one. Decent sized money line favorite. And it's notably the Water Dogs' second game of the weekend. So you need to keep that kind of thing in mind if you're the kind of person who likes to play the ponies here. Maryland has been the last game in each of the first 3 weekends. They have been the fourth game. I don't know if that means anything. It's just interesting to me. They always cap the weekend. And this is the second time they are the home team's second game. They were the Atlas' second game in week one. They are the Water Dogs' second game this weekend. Just like a funny scheduling quirk. I went and looked. They closed the weekend 2 more times. So half the regular season weekends this year, the Whipsnakes play the last game. I guess it's just a scheduling thing. I don't know how that worked out. But does it mean anything? I don't know. It's just weird to me. It's one of these things I notice. My brain doesn't work. We talked Whips a little bit, talking about kind of the trade they made. I do really like their attack. I don't know if I like post-jinxed them the other day when I talked about it. I said I love the way they were built, and then they got shut out for like 20 minutes. But I really do like Rambo, Zed, and Malone. I feel like they had some nice things cooking. I feel like they're improving. I'll tell you what, though. The more they struggle to win and the offense kind of has these down lull periods, the louder people are going to be saying, I told you you should have kept Will Manny. Does Will Manny solve this team's problems right now? I don't know. Probably not. But like, you know, when you cut a guy who was an all-star a year ago and is the kind of career that Will Manny has had, and then the offense is kind of hurting, it's one of those the fans are saying, what in the world are you doing kind of things. The Water Dogs, we already talked about a little bit, talking about their first matchup. I think something to look at for this game in particular, face-off spot. Nardella or LaSala, whoever gets the job for the Whips, probably going to have a big edge. Because again, I haven't seen the roster yet, but unless the Water Dogs have made a move they haven't announced yet, they still do not have a face-off specialist on the roster as I'm sitting here doing this. Maybe they've added one in time for the game, I don't know, but... if they don't have one, then obviously advantage to Nardella and LaSala. I don't know if the Whips would try and do what the Atlas did with Danny Logan. And I wrote about this a little bit. It's on the Sticks Insight. Wrote about how good the Atlas have been in the 32. And one of the reasons is also this. On reps where Trevor Baptiste couldn't go, like he violated the faceoff before, or he's just out of gas, whatever, needs a breather. The Atlas used Danny Logan against Boston, because the Cannons weren't using a faceoff specialist. And without a specialist out there, Logan could just use his body, use his feet, get into position on the ball, and then not pick it up. Which, to me, is evidence that the rule is not a good one. But, different discussion. Not pick it up. He would shovel it, like 8-iron it, as deep as he could into the Cannons' defensive end, either sticking it in a corner or trying to knock it out of bounds down in the corner down there, so that the Cannons have to pick up the ball and play it. And because they do that, the Cannons have to deal with a 32-second offense, and they have to clear the length of the field and sub. I think the Whips could do a bit of that. You could try and trap them down there if they have no face-off specialist, and you think, you know, whoever your shorty is that you think could do it, would get in there and be able to accomplish that. Not everybody's Danny Logan, but like, you know, is it possible to do that with Roman Pugliese? Maybe. Not to be kind of a broken record, because I've said it's a key for other games too, but the defensive midfield for the Whips, I think, is where maybe this game gets decided. The Water Dogs offense is built to be movable and interchangeable. All these pieces, everybody can play midfield, everybody can play attack. You know, the Whips are going to be feeling the Ty Warner retirement here. Pugliese is a great player, but you'll have to deal with lineups on the field of, you know, their starting attack, which is going to be, you know, Sowers and McArdle and you know, maybe Ethan Walker, whoever it is. But then you're going to have also, like, Connor Kelly, Ryan Conrad, McConvey, mix in Brandow, mix in Carraway. The Water Dogs can take your shorties and move them to an invert, to a wing, to wherever they don't want to be. And their Dodger is comfortable there for all their guys because it's how their team's built. It's tough. The Whips are going to be out there. They were using Jacob Boyce as an SSDM. You know, they've got Bernhardt, but they just released Grayson Soliday. I don't know how they're going to defend some of those midfield matchups consistently. And I think that's going to be a key, is those your second shorty. And even Roman, too. They'll attack Pugliese, but... your shorties and how often you have to slide to them will be important in this game, for sure. One other kind of side note for this game, two very bright young LSM stars in this one is Zupacic and Carpenter. Both have looked excellent. Carpenter in particular is lighting it up. That'll be fun to see them battle. Zupacic and Zapatello. I'm going to try and make it happen. The Lords of Dogtown. There is no way anyone below the age of, I'll say 30, knows that reference. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. The Z-Boys. Those are the games. I'm excited for them. They're going to be fun. Father's Day weekend. Take care of your dads. I will be making the trip to Philly for the weekend. Try and get myself a cheesesteak or something between the games on Saturday. Or you know what? I can't believe... I know that the Water Dogs and the PLL have the relationship with Barstool. And Barstool's got the bar in Philly. So, you know, when they do the watch party with the supporter group and all that, it'll be at the Barstool bar. That said, it would be a huge oversight if the Water Dogs never had a watch party at Good Dog. It's the name of the bar. There's a bar in Philly called Good Dog. It's called the Good Dog Bar. It's a dog-friendly bar. You can bring your dog to the bar, and if you're the Water Dogs and you never have a watch party at a dog-friendly bar in Philadelphia, you've made a horrible mistake. I hope they make that happen for at least one weekend. You got to, right? Anyway, those are the games. I will be in Philly for the weekend. I will try and convince the people running the promo that I'm one of the first 500 dads there on Sunday so I get a free hot dog. Make sure you get those glizzies, dads. 500 hot dogs handed away for nothing just for showing up. I can't wait. Thank you for coming back and for sticking around with me. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you next time.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.